You're listening to Building the Game with Rob and Jason.
We're building the game with Jason and Rob. For tabletop game design, you really can't go wrong. Building the game, yeah, building the game.
Charger's not acting, I'm sorry. Tensioning it to make it more
so. Yeah.
Hello and welcome to Building the Game, a documentary podcast. Work.
Yeah, you know how it goes.
Do it.
I'll probably do better than Rob.
He's if you right. got the script, I'll read the script again yeah. for you guys. Right. Show for a few months till that crazy British woman took my job. Outsourcing it to other countries.
Right. Were you the one that like was the most professional one?
Oh yeah, that was yeah.
Hello and welcome to Building the Game, a documentary podcast. Today is
Saturday,
September
26th.
Oh,
2000. Welcome to episode 174. Yes, we skipped from 172 to 174.
Yeah, I said 172 twice.
My name is Nate. With me, as always, is Len. Oh, wait.
Yeah, so we're at GrandCon. Thank you, Greg, for another spectacular introduction.
I did half an introduction, yes.
Well, yeah, better than I would have done tonight. So.
Or any other day.
Yeah, hanging out. Jason's here as usual, along with our buddies Nate and Kelly and Len. Hi, guys.
How's it going?
Len, who you'll know from BTG, Lanier Wexford.
BTG, Lanier Wexford here. Yeah. How's it going?
And Kelly, you don't know at all because he's been mentioned once by Nate on the show. But this is your first time appearing, so welcome all.
Well, thank you very much. It's good to be here.
Yeah, we're happy to have you. And
you just sound way too formal for this. Thank you for having
Excellent.
Me. It's very nice.
And is there a chance we might have a few other people pop in at some
It's
point?
Possible some people might jump in.
Just so. Kind of roll with it.
Yeah, we'll just roll with it.
I mean, hey, if anybody's out there listening right now and you're at GrandCon right now, first of all, I don't know how you're doing that. That'd be weird. But if you're time travel or something, come find us in the Saugatuck room.
And bring the lotto numbers.
Bring lotto numbers.
Yeah. Yes.
Right. Yeah. So, how's GrandCon been, guys?
Oh, it's great.
Good.
Yeah. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah. All you say. Okay.
I didn't win a competition, so it's well,
actually
it's
everyone
bad.
At this table did not win that competition.
Hey, but somebody got third place though.
That's right.
Yeah, that was a little mean the way he teased because there was another Garrett in the competition.
Yes.
Well. Yeah. It was done well, but it was done about as well as everything else was done. So it wasn't bad, but it could have...
That's a backhanded compliment.
It is.
It was lacking some organization.
It was lacking organization, yeah. Right? That's really
you
what
know,
it was.
I think that...
I think, frankly, and I'm going to be the one to say this so that you guys don't feel uncomfortable. I think the judges came in and realized that the way it was organized was not the way they... wanted it to be organized,
right.
So the judges of their own volition decided right. to reorganize the entire thing right. from the beginning.
So right. what that meant was we all thought, at least, and correct me if I'm wrong, we that I know of, at least Rob and I thought this, that we were going to pitch to all four judges,
right?
Mm-hmm. And instead we didn't get to, and it's just interesting to wonder what might have happened if we had pitched to all four judges, because listening to Chris Leader talk about how he said we were basically duking it out, trying to pitch these games to each other, like, no, this game should win because of this or whatever, you know. It would have been interesting to see if the judges had heard every pitch.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I agree.
But it would have taken a very long time.
I don't know.
So just in
like
case
said,
anybody doesn't remember, this is the challenge where we all got a box of components from GameCrafter and we had 24 hours to make a game out of it and pitch it to these
right.
four judges.
And we all did good. Like we all...
We all kind of helped each other out with our games.
I did not do the competition, but everyone else...
Yeah.
In the world,
but you
game.
Sat there while we all
and I walked around. Well, I just kind of like, well, what are you doing? Oh, and what about this? And
we all practiced the pitch just, with Len.
Yeah,
so, because I didn't do anything. But I don't. We got in there, and there was 16 competitors, and then each pair of judges took one person at a time. So 8 rounds went on. They each had 8 minutes, and I really think that in the same amount of time, they could have had one table split in half, one person setting up, one person tearing down. You got 7 minutes to pitch. And your time's done.
And honestly, they could have done 6 minutes to pitch
right.
if you would, because they were doing 7 minutes. They did 8 minutes, but one of those minutes was setup.
Right.
Yeah.
And I mean, I finished my pitch pretty quickly. I think I had a minute left. I actually was throwing other things in, like, oh, and also this, like, because right. I might as well use this minute that I have.
Right.
Well, I timed mine. I was, like, literally at 5 minutes for my pitch. Right. So they could have cut it down quite.
And I think a lot of people, most people were done short, yeah. right? Most people were done short.
I looked over when I was done, and you were already gone.
He was setting up when I started, and I think less than 4 minutes for me. Because such a simple.
What about you, Gray? How long were you?
I took exactly 8 minutes because I ramble, and I know that's a problem with my pitching.
Okay.
It's like I've tried to teach people a couple of my other designs, and I'll just like ramble and meander my way aimlessly through a set of rules.
So do you think if you would have had a tighter amount of time, you would have done as good of a job in that tight amount of time? Like, if you would have given 7 minutes, would you have still rambled but been able to meet the constraint?
Mm-hmm. No. I know I need to work on. I talked with Patrick Nickel, was one of my two judges, and I was like, what can I improve on? It's like, I thought your game was pretty good, but you needed to work on your pitch.
Man's got those limitations,
I
right?
know that.
Right. Well, I would say a couple of things. One, I was the seventh of the eighth round for my judges, and they were pretty out of it at that point. They were just chatting to each other. And I mean, I'm not blaming them, and I don't think I lost because of that or anything like that. But Kelly and I also went at the same time, and had we gotten to choose, we would have switched judges because my game worked better for Richard Launius and Travis from Action Phase Games. And Kelly's would have worked better with Patrick and Chris from Calliope.
See, and I would have actually thought that about mine, but mine did all right with... Chris, I think, was what probably helped mine a lot, because Chris...
Jason, as much as I can say it, I think you would have done good no matter which way you went.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't have a chance to play it, but I thought you had a pretty interesting...
You had a really solid design.
Here's how I would have set it up differently. You know, the room we have, you know, right now has six-person tables or whatever, and when we got in there, that's originally how it was set up. And I would have just had everybody set up their game at their own space and just have the judges move around, you know, like science fair style, basically. Right. That way you don't have to worry about setup and take down time because you're already there.
Yeah.
And they just get to you as they get to you.
You're still doing a pitch at a time, right? You're
right.
Two pairs.
And with eight tables in the room, right? Two, four, or six. Even. So, I mean, they leave a table. Okay, you're on deck. You jump up. They move to the next table. And then... I mean, it would just keep backfilling. That'd be even better than what you had.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because
absolutely.
Then to make sure that like it wasn't distracting when someone was setting up, I mean, you would have their attention. They don't need to sit down. They could just stand there and watch you pitch it, you know?
Right.
I think that would have saved time, but I would have appreciated having every judge see every pitch.
Yeah. Right. So
I wonder if there's a way to get some feedback, like all 16 contestants get some feedback.
I wasn't even a contestant, and I'd like to get some feedback because I really wanted to see the pitches. And that was the thing, you know.
I thought, I was hoping to see everyone's pitches out in front instead of, like, this quiet little group meeting.
See, that was super nerve-wracking to me. I was really glad that it didn't happen.
Mm. I would have preferred that.
Which is, it's funny because, like, I said that someone like, put you through the podcast, and I said, well, if you want to blindfold me and put a mic in front of me or have Rob sit across from me, I probably would do fine. Yeah.
See, and for me, mine was a kind of a social role-playing party game. And so I think if I'd had a bigger crowd that I could kind of, you know, introduce the game and, hey, let's start the game and you take that role and you take that role and I'll be the judge and let's go. And I think if people could have heard some of that stuff, it would have engaged more for me personally.
I think so too. Because your game, I watched you guys play your game and you had a good group and it was funny. Like it looked entertaining.
And mine's about mixing drinks, so more people, more alcohol, all
more
the better.
More engaging, right.
I should have brought props.
Yeah. That's I should have brought them to a shot for each judge. You know, that would have helped.
So. And, builders out there, we set the recorder to record some of that, so I think I got about 50% of them, but I haven't had a chance to listen to the audio yet, so I don't know, you guys might get that on a bonus episode soon, or it might just go in the garbage, so we'll wait and see what happens. Fingers crossed. So that's probably enough about the Breakneck Design Challenge. What else have we been doing at Grand Con this weekend?
Playing prototypes?
Yeah.
I've been playing, like, I just like came here wanting to play everyone's prototypes, and there's a lot of things. I did get to play Back to the Future today.
Oh yeah, Back to the Future.
It was really good.
Sweet.
I mean, there was some really it's a classic Fleeple design, you know. It just got a lot of good, like, and then you're, you know, 12 things you want to do, but there's certain constraints that make you not be able to do them, so you're going to really think and be able to plan, and so it's good.
Is Biff Tannen in the game?
I can't talk about it.
Yeah. You're not allowed to talk about it?
Technically, I believe it, yeah. Like, I can say that I played the game, right?
But you can't talk about
it. But I can't talk about anything other than that. Sure. Like,
no, I get that.
So,
because I'm not buying the game.
Especially since we're recording a podcast right now that's going to go out on the internet.
And it hasn't been announced. It's going to be announced in October sometime. Well, it's already out there, right? I mean, the Twitter's out there.
Wink once if Biff is in it.
I don't know.
He didn't do anything. We're just lying. Ben Pinchbeck. He's not selling you out.
So it was really good though. I mean, right, it was
cool.
Good. Those are good guys.
I played a Portuguese abstract. Well, I guess there's a theme to it, but a Portuguese strategy game called Trench, and I guess the theme is actually like the different pieces. It's sort of chess-ish. Mm-hmm. And the different pieces are like soldiers and sergeants all the way up to generals. And the higher up the pieces, the more ways it can move and the farther. It's basically like a game where all the pieces are queens or bishops, more or less. Like they're all moving diagonal or... Yeah. Anyway, but like in the middle of the board is the trench. And if you have your piece in the trench, they can't attack your piece from their side. But you can go and attack them. So you know, if you want to take a piece in the trench, you have to come around to enemy territory and take them from behind.
Hmm.
But you know,
it sounds dangerous.
Right. it was really interesting, and I just played against another guy I didn't know, and I won. But all the way up to the end, he could have one bad move on my part, and he could have gone the other way.
And it was a nice little change that it wasn't until like a single piece got taken. It was like you had to be wiped for the game to be over.
Right.
Oh, okay.
So you could keep fighting as long as you.
Okay. Right. No.
Everyone was expendable.
That was a proto?
No, it's an actual game that's only available in Europe, apparently.
Oh, well, okay. Yeah.
There's a lot of those.
Yeah.
They're everywhere.
What were we playing? So we played your Lumberjack game, which was awesome.
Yeah, we played the Lumberjack game. We played my River game.
Right. Well, but I made your Lumberjack game better, right?
No, you actually... So we found a way to make the Lumberjack game go on forever, where we each had... two decks left with one card in each, and it was the same card in each.
Mm-hmm.
So I play the card, he'd play the matching card, they wouldn't cancel.
So I thought about a fix for that today. So if you're stuck in a perpetual motion like that,
mm-hmm.
like a chess move, if you're ever in the same position more, I think it's three times, then the game ends.
It's a stalemate.
Stalemate, right?
Well, and if we did that, then I would say the person with the most cards left would have won, and so that would have been you.
You do that, and then you flip over your cards, and then whoever has the most points... still around, but and that's I think that's a solid thing.
One thing we did fix when Len played it was you can't shuffle your decks two turns in a row,
right?
Because that meant that if you had like I had a deck of fours that I was trying to protect, and then like a ten,
mm-hmm.
and so I theoretically just could have infinitely played the ten every turn,
right?
Because I was down to two decks. So play the ten, win. Play the ten again, win. So we just said, hey, you can't do that every turn. You have to do it at least every other turn.
And I think the stalemate thing, you know, if you get stuck in that, because how often is that really going to happen?
Right. And that's the thing. It will rarely happen, like, enough to where, like, I wouldn't even mind just, like, ignoring it, even though we just talked about it on air, so thanks for that. but, no, I'd like to find a fix for it. I just hate having to have those little rules that says, by the way, if this really weird situation happens, like... I have one of those in Ramblers where if everyone ends up fighting at once, then do this. And it's only because of one character. And, like, part of me wants to just remove that ability so I can get rid of that chunk of text in there and make it simpler. So
I played that character.
Well, it was cyclical. So
and you kept trying to use it and people kept losing you.
Like, what I'm trying to say is it's cyclical. Yeah. So if you can prove that you've been here before and the cycle's gone through, then you can end the game there and whoever has the most points. So if you're Matt Loomis...
Right.
And you just program your deck, and you can do that. Then you could say, "Oh, look, game's over." Right. So it wouldn't be just that.
The
one
difference
special...
between those, Matt Loomis would have known before it even happened.
He just said, this is...
Listen, those are the three cards you have over there. I have 12 cards over here. We're just end the game, okay?
Yeah.
Because we're in 17 turns, we will be stuck in an infinite loop, and it's a waste of your time. So I won. Suck it up. I'm only exaggerating a little. He's really good at that stuff. Yeah.
But the River game was awesome too. Like,
yeah, the River game
that was fun.
That's one of the best things I've done in a while.
I agree.
I finally I said this to you guys last night. I finally feel like I've designed a game with one simple mechanic that is still very intriguing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a small game. It's only 72 cards,
right.
So I'm really happy with it. Yeah, yeah.
The game is dead simple. You explain it, and you're like, eh. And after turn two, you're like,
Like, oh, wait, I get this now. This is fun. So
yeah, we spent all of our time last night arguing about what the theme should be and no time arguing about changes to mechanics.
Yeah, we had to change one mechanic for the end game just to make it make more sense. So it basically, So we also played...
They don't all flow down anymore?
The last turn, everyone drafts. It all flows down. If there are no cards left in the deck... Everyone plays one turn and the game ends.
Okay.
So it's the same thing, but it gives one extra turn. Because then when that happened, like, if somebody has a bunch of cards, it gives them the chance to play some extra cards out.
Yeah.
You know, or they could draft. So, you know, it's kind of risk reward thing. We played your Power Rangers game.
Is the Red Ranger?
Blank is the new red.
Yeah.
Blank is the new red.
More a little more wordplay than that. Yeah,
because the idea is that the Red Ranger has been fired from the show.
No. He's so set on a reality TV show.
Power Rangers.
Power Rangers theme. Not actually the Power Rangers, just generic Sentai team, which the red one is usually the leader.
Yeah.
for those of you who don't know.
Which is...
So the theme is your reality TV show. It's taken off. Your leader has become famous, so he's decided to screw the team in saving the world and is off to pursue a movie deal, presumably for the ladies. And so now you're all duking it out for ratings to see who gets the best or who gets the highest ratings by the end to become the new leader of the team.
And we decided that if you use blank as the new red and use the actual blank line, that should actually alphabetically be the very, very first game.
Top of every list.
So top of every list.
That's good. Yeah. Underscore.
Great for unpub, you know.
Yeah,
right. Oh, I see. Rather than
not the word blank, but an actual blank.
That's smart.
Underscore.
Yeah. Good plan. Yeah. You're like, I will get recognition for this game one way or another.
So we've
so hopefully we gave you some helpful feedback.
It was wonderful.
So,
you guys gave me a lot of stuff to think about.
The theme is great.
Well, thank you.
Great. And the monsters cracked me up.
But the only part about it that was, for me, was difficult was the scoring, as we talked about.
Everything else was
so solid.
Rest of the gameplay, the mechanics are simple enough that,
it was actually kind of funny to read the cards, because once you knew what your theme of your deck was, you know, every deck had its own, like, theme of monsters, and you'd be like, oh, that totally works. Yeah.
And dual-purpose cards. And that's a perfect game for dual purpose cards. So.
Right. Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. And Greg, we haven't really seen much of you this weekend. So what have you been playing?
What have I been playing? Not as much as I'd like to have played. I have my own design of a space kind of planet building game called Terra Firma.
Yeah, did we see that last year?
That really was cool.
Yeah. You guys walked by it last year on your way out of the con.
Yeah, I think you spent a few minutes
saying, like, oh, that's cool. See you next year.
Well, I saw the copy this year, and I remember, like, last year it was like inkjet printed paper and kind of put together, wasn't it? And like there's some really nice cards that you have now.
Yeah, the cards have been pretty much nailed down, and I got those printed through the Game Crafter. Same with a nice prototype box to haul it around in, so I'm not hauling it in my smash up expansion boxes and whatnot.
Yeah.
But there are some player mats that are still in flux. Those are on some card stock still.
Sorry. Whatever his tongues.
I will wait.
So I haven't been able to playtest that as much as I wanted to. I probably spent too much time on the Game Crafter challenge.
That was a bigger time soak than you would have thought, right?
I think
I was like, I'll do this in like 2 hours, and then it took probably 7 hours. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It was super fun. I liked the challenge of the Game Crafter design challenge, but next year it's going to be better. I know it. I hope to get Terra Firma out more tomorrow. I've played some of the other games that were here. Fourth place winner of the Game Crafter Challenge, Amy... forget her last name. She has a game where you build robots by selling scrap, and then those robots go off to a derelict space station and collect more scrap.
Oh, yeah, I saw that. I didn't know it was hers.
An interesting little engine building to it. She wants it to be a very accessible game, and specifically one that encourages that girls can play and encourage them to think about robots and about engineering type things and stuff. That's one of her goals of the game, and I think she's on the track to that.
She was the only female participant in the breakneck challenge. Yeah. And
yes.
And frankly, I was surprised to see even one.
Right. Awesome. I really would. I mean, mm-hmm. I was hoping, or, you know, you always hope to bring more new kinds of people, new, you know, I would like to see more gender,
playing games.
There's a lot more females here.
They start breaking into the actual design.
But I mean, obviously, there are like Anissa Jones and Suzanne Zinsley, and you know, there are some out there. We just want to see more of them. Yeah.
Well, yeah, there are some, like the game design community in St. Louis for board games and video games. Their head organizer is a woman, Carol Mertz, works on Happy Badger Studios. Okay. Does a lot of stuff for them.
Yeah.
I mean, just go ahead and take a Tums now. Yeah, anybody else need one?
No, I'm good.
Yeah. No.
We scarfed down a bunch of fajitas like you did.
Dude, I saw the burrito that Nate ate.
It was bigger in my head. But I didn't finish it. Yeah, I didn't have it. I did not finish it.
It was still like a whole burrito.
Yeah. So I'll make this plug for Grand Con. I've never gone to Gen Con. It's giant and overwhelming, I know. And, one of the reasons this is my second year at Grand Con, and I'm planning on coming back because I love the size of it.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we just were over in the game hall, and every table was full, and it was crowded. You know, people were standing, and that's awesome. But even, like, attendance for the whole weekend is, what, like 3,000 maybe?
Right. I'm not sure.
So, since last Grand Con, was my first con, right? Yeah. And I came out here, and it was nice. I would get to hang out and see everybody. That's a cool thing, too. I think this one is more of a friendly.
That's what I like.
I went to Origins this year for a day. And that was cool because I got to see some buddies from Massachusetts that flew in, but it was sprawling and big, and it wasn't as like
it's daunting.
A nice warm. Well, that wasn't daunting.
No,
Gen Con. On the other hand, my daughter last year when I came back from Grand Con and we were talking about going to Gen Con, she's like, "Daddy, Gen Con!" And so like the whole entire year she was prepping for it. So like, yes, we're going. So went Sunday, met you guys in the morning, and then I thought you guys were like all pissed off at me or something, but then I heard the podcast later where you're like, we stayed for an hour and we just went home.
Yeah. I was sick. It was not.
Yeah, you guys look. I mean, you could look at you guys. You was like, sick. Oh, you guys look miserable.
Yeah,
but that place was so daunting. Running around there and just seeing everything, and then
you're not gonna. I mean, there's not nearly as many publishers or anything here, but
no.
I mean, I can literally just walk up to. Whoever, and have a conversation. You know, I've already talked to Patrick Nickel at Crash Games. I'm Kotarski, of course. You know, and you know Richard Lonnie is wandering around, handing out wisdom and knowledge as he does. You know, but like
Lonnius.
Yeah, I mean, John Gilmore is like a freaking superhero here since he sold 80,000 copies or whatever of Dead of Winter. He walks around and everybody's.
Well, he's a co-designer.
Right.
Sorry.
He's 80,000 half copies.
So that's still 40,000 more copies than anyone else. To be clear.
Right.
Well, and it's the being able to see each other. Like, were you at Gen Con?
Yes.
So I saw you for like 2 minutes maybe at Gen Con?
Yes.
So we just don't see each other. Saw you for like 2 minutes at Gen Con.
What did I do? Like, where you at, Rob? We're at the car. I'll be there in a little bit. And then you got there, and it's like, well, what row are you by? And, am I this row?
Yeah,
and
it took us like 10 minutes to locate each other just wandering the hall.
Right.
Yeah. Like, here you go. Like, I'm in the vendor hall. Like, look down this aisle. No. Oh, there you are down that aisle. Okay.
Right.
And this con is going to grow.
Absolutely.
But this con will never be as big as Gen Con. I mean, you know.
No. Well, it is growing, right?
I don't want it to be as
big as Gen Con. No, right. No, no. I don't think that Mark and Brian even want that.
But if you're within a short drive of a local con, do it.
Yeah.
This is still
awesome.
The best run local con I've been to. Yeah, I mean, this is run way better than Origins is.
So. Absolutely.
I
always thought
hey, my housing,
I wouldn't do that, right?
My housing was much better.
Gen Con. I don't know. Origins, like you talked the line, I went there.
Yeah.
We went in and got serviced.
We went more than once, though, Lennon. It was always bad.
Yeah. Did you get there at 11 every single time?
I don't remember that. Well, I've only been there one time.
Okay.
I'd not interested in going back.
Yeah. I've been twice now, and it was both times it was not a great experience.
No. I'd go back there.
Now that Unpub is on the table in Baltimore, if I'm going to go to another big con, I'm going to do that. I'm going to skip Origins.
Right.
And what's great about Unpub is like this.
Yeah.
Except for all you do is get to play your prototypes all day.
Which is pretty much all I've done this weekend anyways.
Right.
Prototypes.
Right. I think can't think of his name, not Chris, but
did
Compounded. Come on, help me out here.
Daryl
Lauder. Thank you, Daryl. Daryl was talking on State of Games about Unpub, and there was only like 1,000 people that came. Which, I mean, I don't mean only 1,000, because when you're talking about unpublished games, it's a pretty good number.
Well, 1,000 designers, but then...
No, 1,000.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but the year before it was like 500, and the year before it was like 100.
And the first year was like 20 in a church.
Yeah.
So like,
church basement, yeah.
That's a really cool...
Exponential growth there, yeah.
Last year, not this, well, the year before last was the first year I went in. They had upgraded to the Catholic school lunchroom from the church basement.
Right,
so.
Nice.
So, and so they're trying to get back to that feel, but have a bigger thing, right, because they're doing the tag tables, and then Daryl was talking about how they're doing 60 designer tables, and they don't want to do more than that because they don't want to like have so many tables that you're watering down the people that are there.
But it's tough though, because I mean those tables sell out in 10 minutes. You know,
so fast.
30 minutes. Yeah. He said that the main tables were 10 minutes, and then the first round of
tag tables
were like 25 minutes, and by 30 minutes, everything was gone.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, I want more. And it's like, well, the space is only so big.
The space, trust me, the space is unlimited. It's way bigger than this.
Right.
Well,
it's the Baltimore
the
convention
space.
Yeah.
The more they have money, you have to pay for it.
Right.
So.
But they could also charge more for those
tables. And even if they're selling, you know, 250 tables, doesn't mean they're going to get enough people in off the street.
That's true. That's true. I mean, I think that every year they can grow a little bit and still be able to support it.
Right.
Because every year you're going to, as long as they do a good job running it, which they do, you're going to get more people every year, right?
Yeah.
It's like this, you know, as long as they keep doing this right, every year they're going to get, you know.
Well, I think it's going to change a little more too, though, because as more people go there and more people want, I think it's going to become a destination con for a small core of people, right? For the people that are, right, nerdy and into like the protos, like, mm-hmm, you know,
dwarves,
designers and me.
Not like
just
us.
Like niche.
Well, I think that you've got, I was just reading about this, you know, you've got Comic-Con in San Diego, but then you have Wizard World Comic-Cons where they go to different cities, like 17 cities throughout the U.S. And I would love to see something like that where you know, many years from now, Unpub is so big that they have the minis, but to have them more like a traveling con, and some people would try to do
Unpub events
more.
But I think the Poland, because I think Portal Games put it out.
They had an international Unpub.
I think there's been two now. I'm not 100% sure, but and I'm always excited about the minis. So you know, I go to New Mexico next year. I'm really hoping to. I know there's a design community there. To get in touch with them and try and set up some West Coast Unpub stuff and try and get Unpub on the West Coast a little bit.
That'd be cool.
Yeah, it'd be fun.
So hey, Grand Con. So we're at Grand Con.
Yeah.
But no, I was gonna say about Grand Con. So I think that, I mean, they've outgrown this space, right? I mean, next year they're gonna need to get a bigger space.
Well, we said that last year, and I think they wanted to go to a new place this year, but I don't know what the deal.
Well, I know they don't.
That game hall is full.
Yeah, it is full, right.
They don't want to do what so many other small cons have done, which have little... Well, first of all, most small cons just don't do much at all. But, like, the ones that are successful will start to be successful, then you move to a bigger place, and then what happens? You go, oh, now we can't afford the bigger place, you know.
So they're being smart about it.
Can't fill the bigger place.
Smart, but hopefully next year they can get somewhere a little bigger.
Right.
I mean, it's awesome to be on-site with the hotels. Like, that's great.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that's so great.
Yeah.
But...
And it's a little bigger. You know, I mean,
they rearranged it with the vendor hall in the middle.
So it's a little wonky that, I mean, I was really nervous that it was going to be weird with it in the middle.
Yeah.
But no. And I, so I asked Mark about
vendors
that.
Vendors get all that foot traffic because walk by them to get anywhere.
I asked Mark, I said, hey, what's up with this? And he said, basically said, hey, the vendors before were kind of shoved off to the sides and they said, hey, we want to be in the center, and he said, okay, but here's your trade-off, right? You're going to have to cover your tables because, and we'll have security, but I mean, you can't guard everything
after
all
6
the time.
O'clock.
People here are pretty cool. I mean, I don't think there's a lot to worry.
It's also a benefit of this being a small con, right? I think this, it's...
Right, at Gen Con, your stuff would just get stolen.
We get ganked.
Right.
They're shady.
Well, they actually took less vendors this year.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
They knew it was the right decision, even though vendors make them.
And they moved the RPG guys down to the salons.
Good.
Well, no, they were in here, but it was like wall to wall.
Yeah, I remember looking in the Pathfinder room last year, and you know, you had DMs with their back to each other, like literally with their back to each other because there was no room between the tables.
Yeah. I think the RPG players like had a good layout because even though they're kind of like down a couple halls and it feels like
they're being segregated, those rooms are the best for them to
absolutely.
You have three tables per room, and they can all like hear each other and stuff. They don't have noise coming
they
in
can
from
create their
a
worlds.
Big hall next to them.
Absolutely.
And it allows them to focus on those.
Last year, kind of an interesting story. You know, like last year, about this time, pretty much all the like game designer community took over those rooms, and we'd all just start playing each other's prototypes in all those little rooms back there. And it was just that. Like, it was quiet, you could talk, and it felt, a little elitist or exclusive because it was just game designers. But, like, I know Jason and Len both played the game that is now published called Vault Wars by John Gilmore, and they played it in a prototype game last year.
Yeah.
So
I don't know how we lucked out in getting this whole big room for
I don't know. I walked around, and there was nothing in there, and there were no labels on this room. So
and then we closed the door. So,
so now people think something legit is happening in there.
Right. It's legit, right?
We have squatter rights now.
That's right. Possession is 9/10. So... Are we gonna try and pitch a game or something?
No, here? I thought about what we should do.
What should we do?
We should do lightning round pitch challenges.
Lightning round.
Remember, like we've done in the car with Andy that one time when Andy was like, really embarrassed
with the Beetle bombers.
He's probably really mad because I brought it up again. Yeah. Why do I keep doing that?
So are we doing? So we're doing just a title.
So, I think just a title. Let's make it easy, right?
Just a title.
Okay. But we'll just go around. I think. One of us, like, we'll pick somebody to start. We'll roll a die to figure out who's going to start.
Okay.
And,
No?
I'll go second.
I'm not first.
I'll go first. I'll break the ice for you guys.
So you go first.
Okay, so I need somebody to give me a title.
So,
Nate, give me a title.
So then after that, you get to give someone
Thanksgiving
else a title.
Dinner.
And Greg volunteered to go second.
Sure.
Okay. All right. Title. The Rubber Ducky Armada.
The Rubber Ducky Armada.
I just saw Rubber Ducky over there. <They're> so safe. Yeah, those are Kaiser so safe.
The Rubber Ducky Armada. Okay. So, is the, I think this game is actually going to have Rubber Ducky Meebles. It's not going to be played with full-size Rubber Duckies because... That's just too much, you know?
The Jumbo Con version will have, like, a pool.
Well,
actual pool.
Right. Giant-sized Rubber Ducky Armada, yes. But no, but this game, this will be...
Kickstarter exclusive.
This will have little Rubber Ducky meeples. And there are four armies of Rubber Duckies in four different colors. You know, yellow and blue and green and red, for because those are standard colors, right? I don't know. So armada, and so if you're gonna, so an armada, you need a lot of different units in an armada. I think. So this war is taking place in the bathtub, obviously. Mm-hmm. So
obviously,
the game board is it's like a top down view of a bathtub, right? Okay. At one end is the drain, and the drain is kind of a whirlpool, right? So
thanks for breaking the ice.
It's tough. It's good. Rubber Ducky Armada.
You already have a game designed with a big whirlpool.
I was thinking the same.
I do.
I was just thinking about that.
That's a crutch, guys.
Paul would have called him out if he'd done that.
No.
So you go in a circle and you shoot each other.
That's true. You know what? No, so the drain, so there's a rubber stopper in the drain, right? Okay, so it's not actually draining right now. I mean, come on, right?
Yeah.
So, in fact, I think everyone's trying to be the first one to control the rubber stopper. Because as soon as you pull that stopper, you control the fate of the entire world. You know?
Okay. Get your finger on the button.
Yeah, you got your finger on the button, right. And so everyone is starting at the opposite end of the tub, and you're trying to move your units toward the rubber stopper. And now, and you can gang up with each other, right? You know, you can combine your armadas to try and work together to eliminate the other guys to get to the end. So that's the theme. That's the basic introduction. So how does it play?
How does it play, Rob?
So it plays. It's a fast paced game. Okay, you're gonna have a deck of cards, and every player is gonna have their own deck, right? You know, there's just one communal deck. you know, you're going to have a hand of cards. Let's say you're going to have five cards in your hand, right? And you disc, for every card you discard, you can move a unit forward one space. This is a square grid. Okay. You know what? No, it's a hex grid. Hexes are good, right?
Yeah.
Hexes are awesome. In an Armada game, hexes are awesome.
Yeah.
Especially in a bathtub.
It's appropriate. Yeah. Yeah. So you can discard cards to move your units. One sure. hex forward, right? But then you can also play cards to add ducks to your Armada to, excuse me, to move multiple units together within one kind of thing. But cards also then are used for combat. So if you and one of your opponent's ducks are on the same hex, because you can share hexes, you get multiple units on one hex. So if you and your opponent's ducks are on the same grid, you can enter into combat, okay? You don't have to, because like I said, if you create an alliance, you're okay. But if it's somebody you wanna gank, it's gonna be kind of a war thing where you choose three cards, go face down, okay, and then you two cards face down, and then you play one card face up, okay, and the one card face up is your basic attack, and then the two cards that are face down is how much damage you're gonna deal with an attack, okay. And it's basically it's 1-1, one damage equals kill one duck. Okay, so it's actually pretty easy to get more units. That's not what it's about. It's about just trying to stop your opponents and get your guys forced. And you only have to get one duck. Actually, you have to get three ducks. Excuse me, to the stopper, and then you have to hold the stopper for three turns, and then you win. Okay, Rubber Ducky Armada. Okay, so Gray's next.
Do we give him a new title, or is he?
I'm going to give him a title.
Oh, that's right.
Okay, so let's see. Your title is going to be, let's see.
You had like 5 minutes to think about this, man.
I was thinking about other things.
Look on Len's face, is priceless. Like, just staring around, like, "Hey, dummy, think of a title."
This, so it is.
This silence brought to you by.
This shouldn't be the hard part.
It actually is, though. It's really hard. Like,
that's tough.
That reminds me of
Rob started going. I started trying to think of a title because that's the hard part.
That reminds me of the Game Crafter Challenge. The judges and the MC and everything were trying to figure out who goes first. For pitching their stuff. It's like That's the first part of a rule book after the components is like how you figure out your first player.
Right.
They should be good at
25
this.
Game designers in a room and we couldn't figure out who goes first.
That was like at Unpub when they give stuff away, they just do a drawing, they just draw a ticket out, and somebody's like, there's like 200 game designers in here, and the best contest they can come up with is just draw a ticket out of the box.
So the title is it's Lemurs versus cows : the Great War.
Now you're testing my lemur knowledge.
They have ringtails, and they live in Madagascar.
Well, that's only ringtailed lemurs.
There are many different types of lemurs.
Right. Ringtailed lemurs live in Madagascar. Trust me,
stop helping them.
I saw a movie about this with a talking lion and some funny penguins.
And they like to move it. They like to move it, move it.
They like to
move it.
Oh my goodness.
We're trying to stall and give you time
lemurs
to think.
Lemurs versus cows : the Great War.
Right.
Is there any other guy?
Okay. So, of course, the greatest of great wars was the First World War. And, I mean, we all know how the humans fared in that war, but the untold story is the vast regiments of cows and lemurs that had their own trenches and their own battle lines, I'm trying to stall because no mechanisms are coming to mind.
Dude, this is how you stall. You just hex grid.
Hex grid.
Trenches.
Yeah, cows would be horrible in a trench. They go in just fine.
They never
come out. I don't know.
What if you get them in enemy trench and they just plow people over?
So... And... Wow.
What's the goal of the game?
The goal of the game is to take over the opponent's trench. We've got two trenches. One side is the lemurs, and the other side is the other trench is the cows. And I won't assign them to Axis or allies. They had a mirror war going on at the exact same time.
hex waiting. Grid. We got that part right.
I don't think you'd want a hex grid in a trench, because how would you turn?
Yeah, sure, sure.
Yeah, I have dibs on hex grid.
What do cows bring to the table? They bring to the table vast amounts of meat and all the people like making milking motions in my periphery that I'm desperately trying to ignore. They make cheese. Okay. This takes place in France. They have weird cheeses.
Yep.
And so the cows are going to try, that is their weapon of choice, is that they have a production engine where they have to make cheese while in the trenches, and then lob these cheese wheels from one side to the other. It's asymmetric. I mean, cows versus lemurs, of course. Asymmetric. But cows have... cheeses. It takes a long time to create these cheeses, but they can make like these big, powerful cheese wheels that are devastating. Lemurs, they're smaller creatures, and they're grabbing a bunch of fruits from the nearby fruit forests of France that everyone knows is there.
Famous for the fruit trees.
Right,
yes.
Right.
But these fruits are smaller, right. But they can...
African or European?
it's a big community of European lemurs.
Well, I don't know. If only I could throw myself off a bridge right
now. Tell me it's a dexterity game.
You are doing awesome.
Tell me it's a dexterity game. Like a battle flipper.
Hey,
cheese.
Hey. Throw cheese wheels.
Sorry, I shouldn't help.
You're
going to
have your own game design.
Okay, so, the cows are going to have a track where they can go over their progress of actually, like, building their cheeses and stuff, and they've got to milk themselves.
That's going to be hard with hooves.
Sold. I will buy this guy.
Right, the Kickstarter's starting tomorrow. Great. They have to get the milk, they have to process it, they have to put it into wheels, and dip it in that wax coating that's around a wheel, and then, like, just roll it across the battlefield and fill up the other trench.
With cheese wheels.
Okay, the cow's goal is to last long enough so that they can fill up the other trench with cheese and therefore drive the lemurs out. The lemur's goal is to try and just with the fruits, like, contaminate the cheese production
that's good.
Engine with these fruits of various levels of rotting. They can throw fresh fruits right off the tree, like just throw those in really quick. It's not going to ruin the cheese that much. But if they do a miniature version of what the cows are doing, if they let some like rot a little bit, or they spend more time foraging for the rotten ones in the great fruit forests of France... I love the alliteration. I should pitch this to Friedman Freeze. So they can throw like the rotten ones across. And that is going to spoil the cheese production engine. So the lemur's goal is to try and spoil the cheese production enough so that no more cheese can be made. And that's how the lemurs win. Beautiful. And the cows lose. Boom.
Dude, that was great. You did the number one thing you have to do in a pitch challenge is when you don't know what to say, don't stop talking. Yeah. Just keep talking. Yep. And when you can make it funny, that's even better. I just picture like no man's land with these cheese wheels. In fact, I'm going to make a suggestion. If you're going to put it on Kickstarter, consider changing the name to Kingdom Death, : Lemurs vs. Cows.
Right.
Lots of cow minis. Yeah.
Cow lemurs and cheese wheels as well. Cheese wheels. Even if they have no purpose in the game.
Play it with those little mini cheese wheels that you peel and eat.
The baby bells.
Little baby bells?
Oh. Yeah. They're so good.
Well, or and you can get like other cheese, because like, other cheese wheels out there, right? So the baby bells are like the smaller ones.
Yeah.
And then you get the more giant cheese wheels.
Right.
So maybe at like two levels of cheese wheels.
All right, who's next? So
you're gonna go?
I'll go.
I have to pitch a title.
Yep.
The title is boy, Rob, this isn't easy. The title is All Those Fenders.
All Those Fenders.
Rob almost spits water.
He's actually writing it down.
All Those Fenders. All right, so this is a game that takes place in Detroit. Okay?
Okay.
In the 80s.
Okay.
When it was bad.
Okay.
Right?
As opposed to...
It was bad.
It is so much better now.
It is so
Have
much better now.
Have you seen RoboCop? Oh my God, this is so bad.
So, All These Fenders. Detroit 80s. And it's the Bloods versus the Crips, right? And they're having trouble getting money. So,
okay.
But there's a lot of cars around there, right? And fenders get a lot of money, right? In the 80s.
Sure.
Right.
Scrap metal, I don't know.
So depending on the type of car you go and get and like scrap their fenders, then you can sell it. So that's
funding the gang war. I love this.
So yes, exactly. Because you sell the fenders to get the money to buy the drugs to do really bad things, right? I don't condone any of this, right? Just trying to pitch a game.
Uh-huh. Try it.
Yeah. As long as you stay historically accurate, it'll be just fine.
Right. So far,
he's on par.
So blue and red, and during the first phase of the game, or the first like two parts of the first phase, the gangs actually have to go out to the suburbs, but not get caught. So there's a chance that it's just a die roll, right? You just roll a six sided, and if you to even number, you get caught, or I don't know what that is. I can figure that out later. But so you go out there, and you're sneaking around, and you're trying to find cars. And there's just stacks of cards out there that are cars that are parked in people's houses. So it's just a deck. You draw the deck. And you see what fenders you have, and in order to get the fenders, you need to. I don't want to roll dice here. That's just stupid.
Yeah,
like the rest of the game.
That's so dumb about stealing fenders.
Dyson.
Hey, I didn't come up with this title, right? I'm doing all.
I would have gone with guitars, but.
Oh man, I did not. That's
what I was trying to leave it open for. I wanted like a multi-use word.
Too late.
Way too late.
They can steal guitars too.
No. Only stealing fenders from cars.
There's no economy in with gang.
Oh, this is terrible now. So you flip a card over. Yes, now. It was terrible from the title. Right?
Hey, I thought it was a good title. On him. He gave you two choices of that title.
Yeah, and I went with the crappy one.
The Great War. I was hamstrung with lemurs and
true.
Not only that, with the Great War,
there's a chance of it being a fender. This is totally pointless now. Roll another die. You either get the fender or you don't. Right.
One just gives up.
Then you take the fenders and you go back. And whoever gets the most fenders in two rounds wins the game. Whatever. It's stupid.
All right.
Since I ruined your title. I'm sorry, Gray.
It's all right.
Terrible.
It's all right.
That was terrible.
It was short and sweet.
We're going to suspend the Kickstarter for now.
Yeah. No, there is no Kickstarter. That's a terrible idea.
Fine. Indiegogo.
Right. Well, the first thing that came to my head was hubcaps. And I was like, but this isn't hubcaps. This is fenders.
Isn't Indiegogo how they raised the money for the RoboCop statue in Detroit?
No, that was Kickstarter. And it still hasn't been built yet.
What?
Shocker.
Yeah, they still haven't built... Detroit too much still needs RoboCop.
Because the trucks that are trying to deliver it keep getting their fenders stolen.
Oh, it all makes sense now.
So I made fun of you a bunch, so I'll go next. Right. Give me a crappy title.
Narcoleptic Pharmacist.
Oh, we had that one ready.
Because that's fun.
Narcoleptic Pharmacist.
Right.
Okay, that is a great game. So this is a set collection game. Except for the losers, really, in this game are the patients, because they're going to be getting drugs that are not good for them and having bad interactions. Because as the narcoleptic pharmacists are trying to fill pill bottles, they're, of course, falling asleep, because that's what narcoleptics do, right? So while they're doing that, they're sorting out pills wrong. So I think to play this game, see, you have to simulate that you are actually a narcoleptic pharmacist. And we don't want to give we don't want to give drugs in the game box to people, right? To make them pass out.
We might want to,
but not approved. I'm pretty sure Kickstarter would not be okay with that. So instead, what you're going to do is you're going to get blindfolds, and it's going to come with real pill bottles, right? So I guess maybe it's a little dexterity. I don't know. I'm just making this up, right? So you've got this. You know what you've got?
Fenders?
No. Okay. So that the meter stick thing you're talking about, the meter board.
Oh, the meter board.
So you
board,
have
yeah.
like a meter board style thing, right? With like
yeah,
grooves.
You can't
in
just
it.
Say that.
Okay, so
what you're talking
a
about.
Meter board is apparently a thing in Germany where they.
Okay, in Germany, when you go to the bar, you order a meter board. And what a meter board is literally a meter wooden box that holds 3 ounce glasses, a meter of 3 ounce glasses, and they're full of beer. Normally it's alt beer. And so when you go there, you just order a meter board, and then everyone partakes of the 3 ounce glasses, and you have several meter boards in a night.
So, all right, so like that. But smaller, and on that is where your pill bottles fit. That way you don't accidentally spill them. And then you get a bunch of bits that are different types of pills, and I don't know how you would make those. Maybe it's just chipboard.
Okay.
Maybe it's cubes of different colors.
Kingdom Death.
$1 million. So we'll say they're cubes, because that way they're all kind of the same, right? And therefore easier to mess up. So the what happens is you are taking the cubes and you're trying to fill orders. So what you get to do is you get to look at these cards you put out. And these are the orders I need. And then you have 30 seconds to try and sort them as quickly as possible. You can't put them in the pills, but just to try and sort them as quickly as possible, right? Maybe it's not even 30 seconds. Maybe it's like 10 seconds.
10 seconds in time.
Yeah, 10 seconds. Okay, and then blindfold down.
Wait, how'd
that
go again?
Okay. Blindfold down. And then you have to fill the pill bottles as best you can, right? Okay. And then every player has to do that. And then you have customer cards, right? And then you have to look at the order and guess which pill bottle is closest to what the customer needs medically. And then you put the pill bottle on the customer, and then you see if they had a drug interaction and died. And if they did, you lose points, because that's not good. Yeah, so sometimes it's narcotics, so sometimes they come back and they want more, right? And in that case, you could
put... Yeah, my gang and my drug use was wrong, and now you're giving people narcotics.
Hey, pharmaceuticals, okay? It's a thing.
That's what they wanted to buy. With the fenders.
So anyways, yeah. So what they do is you put the pills in the bottle, you give them out to the customers... And really, the goal of the game is to be the last pharmacist to get fired, right? Because you're all going to get fired. Oh, maybe or indicted. I mean, something, right?
Yeah, go to prison.
Yeah, so the last pharmacist to have negative consequences, yeah, and that's the person who wins the game. So it's player elimination, because this game sucks anyway. So
very good.
All
right. I think the cheese wheels are winning right now.
Yeah.
Seriously.
You've got
the gamers are winning.
I'll go first.
Oh,
I'm
sorry.
Let him close out.
Okay. Ready?
Right, bring it.
Weed whacking warrior women of West Virginia.
All right.
Weed whacking warrior women of West Virginia.
Yes.
You did that just to annoy Rob, didn't you?
Yes. This whole time I'd be like, how many W's can I fit into this?
That's five. Five and a V. Consummate V's. Consummate.
V's a half W, so it's five and a half.
Yeah. Yeah.
I like the way you think.
Well,
see. So we've got Weed Whacking Warrior Woman. That's going to be fairly straightforward. And it's West Virginia, so that's got to involve, like, coonskin caps. And... So here's the whole plot of the game. Potheads decided to descend on West Virginia due to the re-rise of John Denver in the pothead community.
Ooh.
Rocky Mountain, huh?
So they've gone to there because it's almost heaven. And all these mountain women living up in the mountains have decided that they can't stand this. All these young, hippie people with their long hair and whatnot. So they're going to go around destroying the crops.
Nice.
You say mountain women? Are you sure they're mountain women?
Yeah.
They're not mountain mamas?
You didn't say the, you know, whatever, marijuana mashing mountain mamas in Montana.
Well, I wish we had, because now we have drugs and three pitches.
Lemurs versus cows, drug free.
Hey, you brought up rotted fruit. That's alcohol. That's technically a drug.
Oh, man.
I'm the only one who's clean tonight.
That's true. You are super clean. So
how clean is it?
Kelly's going to be like, heroin addicts, go.
I already told you our title on the card.
This is not radio friendly.
Okay, so anyway. So... it's going to be a... So that's my thing. Mountain women running around destroying weed.
All right, how's it play?
That's what I'm trying to figure out. I kind of...
Is that kind of Texas? Is,
no.
No, I already played Texas.
He claimed text for it. Otherwise, yes. Obviously. Multi-tiered.
Three-dimensional X.
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah. Like they can look down from the mountain to see where the crop is. No, so instead what it is going to be is you have... it is going to be a dexterity game.
Great.
Yes. So you've got... Little standees of potheads. Little hippies. And you've got your... Let's just add random components. Little glove that's like perpendicular to your fingers that looks like a woman in a coonskin cap and clad and stuff like that.
Daisy Dukes.
And a card that's just a print of a big hand. And you've got to smack the potheads with the hand. The scoring would either be you have... To either see if you can manage to take out as many as you can because you have a limited number of slaps before someone's actually going to come and do something about the assault.
All right. Okay.
Or,
so you're literally whacking the potheads.
Yeah, you're weed whacking. You're whacking, smacking them.
Gonna knock them down the Appalachian Mountains.
Yeah.
And how do you win?
How do you win? I'm going to say that the way it works. Is you're actually playing several on a... So, like, four people on a board or two people across. You could do three people, but the way it works, the third person is just kind of like, eh. And you're trying to knock all of the weeds pockets in the other people's territory. So you each get one smack around, and the first person to actually clear out their neighborhood completely... wins, but people are going to be knocking the potheads back into you as time goes on. So it's going to be... You got to have to get really efficient with the...
With
the little whacking arm thing.
The weed whacking.
Yeah. I feel like the D.A.R.E. program is going to call you up for this.
This is
we need this. It's an educational tool.
Yeah. That's I like that you did the spin on weed whacking instead of just being like... So I was picturing them like actually like... Yes. So that's good.
I decided that was too straight.
Also, using those on potheads might work too.
Chase them. All right.
Well done, sir.
I'm pretty sure those
give me my real title.
Real title?
Not one that won't so make iTunes. Hobos.
No.
Nose hairs curl.
Let's see. Your real title will be Flamingos.
Flamingos?
F-L-A-M-E.
Like
N-I-G-O-S.
Like combination of flaming and flamingos?
Yes.
Flamingos. Flamingos.
Good.
Somebody tell a story or something. Give me some time.
These fenders go.
Flamingos. Okay. So you've got these this flock of flamingos. I think they're a flock. Anybody know?
We'll go with it. Good.
They're birds, for sure.
Yeah.
One of the builders, Google it.
And
letting us how the show works.
Flamingos. I'm sure there's like some fancy word for a group of flamingos. But anyway, you got your flock of flamingos. Everyone has their flock of flamingos. And those flamingos, and then, you know, they're sitting in the marsh, and the marsh catches on fire.
Oh, no. Wahida.
Right. And so the flamingos have to get out. You know, you're trying to get your flamingos out without, and it's cruel to say you want other people's flamingos to flame, but
a group of flamingos is a pat.
A pat, P-A-T?
P-A-T.
So each person wants to get their pat of flamingos out.
Good job, Builder.
See, we just had Builders live in the room when we did the podcast. So we can look stuff up.
Right,
for us.
Right.
What's the intern you were talking about, right?
I mean, yeah, the intern.
The board would be actually tiles, so it's a modular board, you know, maybe 5x5 tiles of the swamp, or did I say swamp? Marsh.
Marsh.
Same difference. I don't know the difference. You know, and various trees and things in the way, maybe some gators here or there that might eat you. So you can move safely if you move, like walk, but you can risk flying, but if you fly, you might get caught up in the smoke and get disoriented or die. But you can move farther if you fly. So everybody, you know, if it's a four-player game, everybody has their six flamingos, their pat of six flamingos, and that they have to get out of the swamp through these various traps and travails. And the mechanism for doing that is...
Why are you looking at me?
Because I'm thinking... I'm going to steal from Gunslinging Ramblers. We're going to have highest unmatched die. So you get to roll as many dice as you have flamingos, and everybody rolls at the same time.
Oh.
And then you do, and if you have an unmatched die. We'll do it differently, because that's like 18 dice if you have a three-player game. That's a lot of dice. You roll your six dice or whatever, and if you have a pair, then you can move a flamingo... You know, so if you have a pair of sixes, you can move a flamingo six along the ground or double that in the air, we'll say. I don't know. I'm making this up. But then once a flamingo is gone, you only have five flamingos, you only have five dice. It's harder to get that next one out and down until you have one flamingo and then...
So when you have one flamingo, how do you do the pair? Like you don't have a pair?
I don't know. Maybe you still get to roll two dice when you're down to one flamingo. I don't know.
Okay, and then you pair and you only get to move that one.
Yeah, I don't...
Or just dice.
Or just... Yeah, but I like the matching thing better because it's kind of like a little bit of luck. I mean...
And it makes sense.
I don't want to make it just a straight roll and move. Like, you roll and you move.
Question. Can we get illegal drugs into this? Somewhere?
Yes. The flamingos are in Florida. Because that's where Flaming Flamingos of Florida.
That explains. Yeah.
They're flying to the fruit forest of France.
Friedman Freeze, you gotta listen to this.
Fantasy Flight. I'm calling you. They're trying to make it out of Florida into Cuba.
Uh-huh. Oh,
with their
excellent.
Pack, but they're so actually all like mules? They're like they yeah bring, they're carrier they pigeons.
Wouldn't they bring them into Florida? Not,
whatever, I don't know.
Back. Oh, cash back,
right.
Cash back to Cuba,
right? Cash to Cuba. so they're flying. They're carrier pigeons of sorts to fly cash to Cuba to get drugs to bring it back. I don't know.
Oh,
good.
That's right. It.
Well done, gentlemen.
It's good.
Well done.
Man.
Yes, thank everybody. You. Good job.
Yeah.
Except for the fender thing, that's terrible.
Well, to be excellent. You do less designing than everyone else here, so
yeah,
like zero.
Right. It's less.
Right.
So we're reaching the end of the show here. Everybody, one more time around the table. What is your favorite thing about Grand Con, Len?
You know what? Actually, it's hanging out with you guys, because it's like the once a year. Seriously. You know, you guys and Ben and them and just all the people that you only come to a con and you only see him that one. This is a cool because at this con, you really get to see him. And it's not like drive by, hey guys, you know, in this massive swamp of people.
You make that pose when you do it.
I do totally. Hey guys!
Okay, so he used that one. No one can use that now.
Oh, man, that's like everyone's answer, too.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's the easy one.
It's the easy one. Well then. Something easy. I, Kelly, will have to go with. Well, it's my first time. It's,
what have you liked so far? Your favorite thing so far?
Well, he already took the lovely people. honestly, I really, even though I didn't win, I really enjoyed doing the game challenge thing, just be given things and, like, this is your time period, crank it out. It's a lot of fun.
Good. Yeah.
Well, yeah, since the good one was taken, I'll have to say I've gotten a lot of good, like, I've this whole year I've been able to tell people, like, whenever somebody brings up Smash Up, I'm like, oh yeah, I met Paul Peterson. He's a cool guy. Somebody brings up Tabletop, I'm like, yeah, Bo, yeah, I met him. You know, it's kind of like fun street cred when you're just like, oh you like Arkham Horror? Yeah, I've talked to Richard Launius. He's cool. You know, there's some bragging friends. Rights there, yeah. Definitely. And I really had real conversations with these people.
Right. So.
Kelly has another one.
I want to go back and change mine.
The new guy. FNG.
Yeah. So, no, it was actually getting people that know their crap to play my games and play other people's work. I think a lot of feedback and a lot of experience.
So you just stole two answers then.
Yeah.
Right, thanks right. for that.
All right, Jason, on the spot, think of a new one.
This is the hard part. I don't know. All the things you guys said, but then other stuff. So it's gonna be really hard when it gets to you. So.
Oh yeah. I put myself in this situation.
The beer I had today at dinner.
Oh, it's another good one that's taken now.
Yep.
I'm sorry.
Like, I almost want to pass, but I'm afraid you guys will take anything else I could possibly think of. So, you know, here's something cool. And this is like my sixth favorite thing, since this is the first thing that I got to say. Having my family come up here, like my kids getting to see what it is I do with these things and why I come to them. Because even today at lunch, because we were crimped for time, I was working on my prototype for the thing, you know, while I was eating lunch with them. And like Josiah got to see that and ask questions about what I was doing. And we've talked a lot lately about when I was prepping for this, and we'd be downstairs and I'd be wearing this thing to be playing. He's like, what are you doing? And I'm like, well, I'm working on making a game. And he's like, can we play it? You know, and I just, that's cool. That's rewarding, right? So. I changed my mind. That's like not my sixth favorite thing. That's pretty cool. So, at least only my third favorite thing. My first favorite thing is the people. My second favorite thing was beating Rob in that contest, and then my kids coming.
Surprised that only came up this one time. I really was expecting that to be
the theme
of the show, right?
Grant, what you got?
Even though I didn't get a chance yet to take advantage of it, the game library that is here for the Open Gamers.
It's sick.
That is an amazing selection of games.
Right.
Absolutely.
And the access you have to it. Like, just be able to walk in there and walk through the aisles like that instead of like looking at
it. It's
like,
set up really nice.
Right. Right. Yeah.
We played Mr. Mouth.
Very first game we played when we got to the game.
There've got to be at least a couple thousand games all different sizes.
Yeah.
Such as Waterbloom Washout from
And so a plug for that. So I donated a copy of Waterbloom Washout. If you're a designer listening to this and you have copies of your games and they're not in there, you should donate them to that because that's a chance for people to play your game. You know, and I figured families come to these things.
Right.
It's a good family game.
Sure.
Why not? You know,
yeah, this is a good con and almost I think most cons I've heard about they have like some kind of library you can go into.
But this Mark has talked about this many times. That is like the premier game library.
It really is. Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
Nope. You said it. Okay. So just to put a button on it, it's great, it's well run. They have a play-to-win selection of about a couple dozen games on a table. And if you check out those games and play them during the con, you're entered in a chance to actually win those games.
Oh, cool. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What a great idea.
Yeah,
it's fun.
Okay. And my favorite thing about Grand Con is that we're recording an episode right now so that I didn't have to go over to Jason's house earlier this week.
And so, you're not talking about stuff 3 weeks before
it. Right. I can record an episode tonight with the help of good friends. Yeah. I didn't have to do a lot of work to prepare for it. I can go home tomorrow, and I can just put it through level later and make sure it doesn't sound like garbage, and patch a beginning and end on it and upload it and be done. And that's nice. Fantastic. Nice. Easiest editing job for this podcast ever.
Yeah.
So,
and the intro even wasn't biffed because Gray and Nate did it.
That's right. I don't even have to put an intro on it.
You just have to put the music.
Yeah, this is great.
You want us to phone in for now on? Like, just call it. Tell us when you're recording.
Also, right after you started recording, I swore.
So I listened to like the first 10 minutes. Yeah. And then right. Fine, yeah. All right. So that's enough. Then we'll call it a night. Thanks, builders, for listening. Thank you to everybody here for participating and contributing.
Hey, if you want to find us on Twitter,
yeah,
Rob is at poorly_designed. I'm at J.A. Slingerland. And let's go around the room
yep.
for everyone else.
I'm at Nate Darty, NateDarty.
I'm at Kennyho, KennyHo.
I am at Lydia Wexford.
I am at Gray Dietrich.
All right. And you can find our podcast crap at buildinggamepodcast.com. And you can call our Google Voice number 770-TEL-BTG. One last thing from Len.
It's not crap. After episode like 50.
All right. That's enough.
I can't believe you said the phone number and didn't let Len say it. We know he has the phone number.
No, I don't have it programmed in my thing.
On speed dial.
Siri. Right. Siri, call building the game.
Thanks, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.
Watch out! Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios. All the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are property of the Building the Game podcast. Next time on Building the Game.
Kind of odd. Anyways.